the Ain't No Fang podcast. From Arizona Sports, Ain't No Fang.
Last week we started the podcast by saying nothing was going right for the Diamondbacks, and then magically, most things were going well for the Diamondbacks. I'm Steve Zinsmeister, that's Derek Montilla, and Cody Fincher as well. Because last week when we talked on Friday, I think it was, Nick Ahmed was out, Cole Calhoun was out, Zach Gallen was out, Ketel Marte was out, everything looked disastrous. Then all of a sudden, Friday afternoon, Calhoun was back, Saturday, Nick Ahmed was back, and now Gallen is back and pitching as well, so things certainly looking up for the Diamondbacks. Which player that has returned has impressed you the most so far, Bear?
Zach Gallen. Too bad he was on a pitch count, and I understand why he was on a pitch count in his first start, but he's only able to go four innings against the A's because he struck out eight people in those four innings.
That's pretty good.
And the A's were making D-backs pitchers work in that short two-game series. They were really taking a lot of pitches, so it's not surprising he reached 83 pitches, I think it was, innings. Yeah.
And how many pitches do you want a guy to throw in his first game?
Right.
No, I mean, he was
With a forearm fracture, I get it.
Right.
I totally get it.
That's how many you want him to throw. You want him to definitely throw under 90. And he had a great day, like Bear said.
Yeah, it was great. His hair is fantastic, by the way.
So good.
Getting vibes of early Jacob DeGrom hair vibes.
Yeah.
It
helps that he's a good pitcher, too.
Oh, yeah. He looked
because if you were a not that great pitcher and you had hair like that, it's like, then you're just Noah Syndergaard.
Does it or does the hair help you become a better pitcher? That's the true question.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I don't know. How would it help you?
Weight of hair? I don't know.
Do the work. Do the work scientifically. Right,
grow your hair out and then tell us how hard
science
it is.
Or something. Yeah.
Liked that show. That show
Gallen was impressive. Calhoun is back. That provides a little bit of pop and it gives you an outfielder where we talked about they only had two outfielders on their roster.
I mean, I'll second what Bear said about Gallen. I can't think you couldn't be happier about his return despite the fact that they bungled it in that game and lost that series to the A's.
Yeah, well, that's very DeGrom-esque.
The bullpen gave up six unanswered runs.
Ugh. Unbelievable. The Diamondbacks offense, despite the fact that it hasn't been great, has been putting some runs on the board. They just seem to do it in very short spurts.
It's in like the seventh inning.
Well, one inning, two innings, of a lot of offense, and then that's kind of it. But it's been nice to see. It's been nice to see what they've been able to put together. I've been personally happy with Nick Ahmed's return. I think his range at shortstop is exactly where it was when he left. He looks great defensively, and that was my main concern. The plate, I'm sure it'll take some time to come around because it's more of missing those at-bats and trying to get back on track. But he still hasn't been terrible. He's been able to be very productive after returning from a knee injury that we had no idea how long it was going
to
last.
He seems like he's trying to hit everything in the air, which is weird. He's taking these weird
trying to get under
crouches he's getting way under the ball.
Huh.
It's weird. Like when he swings, if you watch the game, when he hits the ball, he kind of like his knees bend. He gets way low, and it seems like maybe it's what was that thing that JD Martinez did to get tunneling or. That thing that everyone was trying when JD Martinez came over that was working for him, and then it didn't work for Paul Goldschmidt, and he sucked. I think it's called tunneling. Anyway, it's and then launch angle and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But it seems like he's trying to hit everything like in the air, trying to hit home runs or whatnot. But
the Jose Bautista thing.
Yeah.
Where you start to swing up, and all of a sudden you're hitting 40 home runs in a year, and you're like, oh my gosh, I am a good player.
Right.
Yeah. And then you're getting those steroid tests, random quote unquote steroid tests.
I don't think that's what he's going to end up having the same result of. But I do like the rest of the team kind of keeping it small ball at times, despite the fact that we've seen Escobar break out offensively with the home run ball, which.
That's the other thing. On Friday, I think it was Bear who said, like, Escobar has been really bad. And then Friday, he started a tear.
He must have listened to me.
Five games straight with a home run.
It was five?
Yeah, five games straight with a home run. Just impressive. And, I mean, that's the thing is
this, he's en fuego.
This is the thing. It's the fuego de chao. He went there and had an all-you-can-eat meal.
Can't blame him.
I think that this is what frustrates Lavolo. He sees the brilliance in this team at times.
Yeah.
And it's just so inconsistent.
Yeah.
And that's baseball. The key to being a great baseball player or a great baseball team is having that high performance consistently versus it just being so sporadic. What we've seen out of this team over the last week from what where we were at a week ago, where we were desperately seeking any positivity or any light at the end of the tunnel for this team, you know, we saw Luke Weaver flirt with a perfect game and a no-hitter, you know, since then. Luke
Weaver, great.
Someone who we just said we need to see something out of this year because if not, it seems like his entire time here would be a bust.
It was against the Reds, and the Reds have a tough lineup.
They have
a really tough lineup.
They had three guys hitting over 350. They were
the best offensive team in the league.
They were five and one coming into that series.
Still early, but
yeah.
Rather have that than the alternative.
It was an impressive outing. I was there for it, and to be honest, there was just kind of a weird magic in the air after about three innings. You know, like
right.
We've never seen that out of Weaver. We've never seen that level of dominance.
I don't ever remember talking about a great Weaver start.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
At any point.
And it wasn't just that. It was the fact that, like, these guys were the talk of the league so far in the, you know, first week. And here comes Weaver striking them out, going 1-2-3, just through the lineup. And it just kind of started feeling like we might see something, you know, happen. I still think that historically it's his best outing as a Diamondback, obviously.
Absolutely.
And he, you know, he might be back on track to be a much better pitcher than we've seen in the past. Prior to that injury, he was an amazing pitcher. I mean, he really was impressing a lot of people. It was a short sample size, as you would say, but it was still an impressive, you know, length of starts, right? And then you go down with an injury that could have potentially cost you your career. It takes a while for that to rebound, and in some cases, you never do. You know, we might not see him at the same velocity or with the same mechanics that he was prior to it. It just seems like he's really made the right adjustments to, you know, be successful at the mound. Mostly just attacking with two pitches all night long. That was the impressive thing. It wasn't his curveball. It wasn't like this trickery. It was a 97-mile-an-hour four-seam fastball and an 86-mile-an-hour changeup. And just duping dudes. And just being in the strike zone the whole time. Not really dancing around, not taking a lot of outside. You know, maybe going, you know, ball one, ball two. But majority of his strikes were in the strike zone, and it paid off for him. It was impressive.
Was it just me, or did it feel like after the game was over, after you can admire the performance of Luke Weaver, I kind of felt to myself like, okay, good thing that happened, because if it hadn't, he might not have been in the rotation a week or two from now, because especially after they moved off of Caleb Smith one start, I felt like after that game, oh my God, Luke Weaver needed that game. And did you feel the same way?
Maybe there was something in his mind that, I need to go out and do something because Zach's coming back soon. And right now, the only good pitcher in our rotation is Taylor Widener. And then Riley Smith came out the day before that. And
he had a good outing.
So maybe there was something in the back of Weaver's mind where he's like, man, I really need to get my stuff together. But yeah, it was a very welcome surprise to me. And I've been saying this, and Derek said it. I've been saying it for a while. I feel like this is a make or break year for Luke Weaver. And if he's going to be anywhere near where he was in that game against the Reds, then he's definitely going to show something to the front office. And hopefully for him, it's something that they want to see.
On the other side of that coin, though, is Madison Bumgarner, who was signed to kind of fill this massive void in the rotation left by the Zach Greinke trade, where every 5 days you knew you were at least going to be competitive with Greinke on the mound. And Bumgarner was signed. I remember thinking this at the time. We all liked the Madison Bumgarner signing.
I was very happy with it.
But I remember thinking at the time, this guy still hasn't been vintage Madison Bumgarner since 2016. That was the last time he was an all-star. It's the last time his ERA was below 3, which is what I would consider an elite starting pitcher. So you were paying for a guy who was probably about 4 years past his absolute peak. Madison Bumgarner has not been good as a Diamondback, and I don't feel a lot of confidence when he's on the mound every 5 days.
Do you want me to tell you how not good Madison Bumgarner has been as a Diamondback?
Not particularly, but please.
Are you ready for this stat? Mm. He has one win as an Arizona Diamondback. with a 7.64 ERA in 12 starts.
And of those 12 starts, he has not recorded a single quality start, which, if you don't know, a quality start is going at least six innings and giving up no more than 3 earned runs. He's not done that since he's signed here.
Has he ever been the ace of the staff? Maybe at the beginning of last season
when we signed him? Yeah, because we didn't know how good Zach Gallen was yet.
We knew he was like performing well.
Yeah.
But it was in half of the 2019 year.
We didn't know what Robbie Ray was going to be, and he had been changing all his stuff, and we were like, summer camp Robbie Ray looks so good. And then
we were fools.
We were such idiots, man.
You want to know what his average innings per start is?
4 2/3.
Yes.
Am I right?
It's 4 2/3.
Don't get too excited. That's still awful.
That's awful. No, he's excited because he's right.
I guessed it right.
No.
What did I win? Oh, 7 ERA.
You get to keep Madison Bumgarner.
Madison Bumgarner. Yeah. That's what you win.
This is hard for me to say because there's been a lot
of bad things. Just say it.
Just say it. To
this point, and we don't know if he's going to right the ship or whatnot, but to this point,
he's not.
Madison Bumgarner has been arguably the worst signing or acquisition that this team has ever made.
No.
Now we're going to argue.
No.
No what?
Well, no, it's not arguably. He's absolutely right. He 100%.
Oh, you're going to back him up on it.
Is the worst acquisition that this team has ever made.
Who else is up there?
Yasmani Tomas.
But my counter is Yasmani Tomas at least had that one year, I don't remember what year it was.
It was
that
one year
where he hit 30 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
He was a decent player.
Mm-hmm. He's not wrong.
Couldn't play a lick of defense, but it didn't matter at the time.
He wasn't a decent player, but he could hit the ball really well.
He hit 30 home runs that one year. I don't remember
what
it was.
Russ Ortiz
is bad. Yeah. If we're talking all acquisitions, Richie Sexson was bad because he got hurt and they traded a lot for him.
Shelby Miller.
That was a terrible trade.
That was really bad.
By the way, Shelby Miller got into a game with the Cubs the other day and he proceeded to give up 4 hits, 4 earned runs in 0 innings pitched.
Yikes. Yeah, if we're talking all acquisitions, that's got to be the worst.
The Cubs had to bring him up because a lot of their guys have COVID or are in health and safety protocols. But anyway.
Because I think we can all agree sitting here that we would all rather give up $85 million of Ken Kendrick's money for Bumgarner than the picks that the players that got Shelby Miller.
I have a couple more. Sorry.
Go.
The negative stuff really sits with me. The Randy Johnson trade to the Yankees, Javier Vasquez was not good. Was not good for the Diamondbacks. I remember on opening day the year after they acquired.
But how much did they really invest in that acquisition?
They were just trying to get Randy's contract at that point.
The Adam Dunn trade was bad. That did not work out.
This is depressing me. I don't want to do this now.
Eric Burns.
Yeah, that was
Cody Ross.
I was going to say. You know that.
Cody Ross.
Cody Ross was bad. Jason Kubel wasn't
again,
good.
Had that year where he hit like 35 homers, but yeah.
Here's what I'll say.
Steven Souza.
I can understand from a certain degree based on the...
you're right.
You know, based on the balance of this team, I can understand how they might have perceived Madison Bumgarner being beneficial to this team in multiple ways. I don't know Mad Bum's locker room mentality or his locker room leadership. I don't know how much he opens up with the younger guys. This is just my observation. He doesn't seem like the equivalent to Chris Paul on the Suns, who is an on-court coach who is coaching guys like Booker and Ayton and showing them that, like, it's weird, but Chris Paul just shows this love for his game by, you can see him passing his knowledge around to his teammates to make them better and make their team better. I don't perceive Madison Bumgarner being that type of guy, but I can understand their logic behind bringing in that type of veteran to pass that kind of knowledge down and possibly overpaying him for his knowledge to be spread to a younger, talented staff that can very much, you know, gain a lot from his experience. I just don't know if he's that guy.
I think looking back, we probably should have been more worried when the Giants were willing to let Madison Bumgarner walk.
Well, when no one else was willing to give him that fifth year on the contract, not even the Giants were.
Yeah.
That's why he's here. They gave him another year
that
with $14 million.
Do rodeo.
And, yeah, he can buy a ranch in the desert. And
I've seen a lot of people tweeting, I think semi-unfairly, that he just moved here to retire here, essentially. And that's a good quip and everything, but let's be honest, he's still in the prime of his career, and he's not performing like
which
it.
Which is crazy, and you forget the fact that he's only 31 years old.
Right.
Merrill Kelly is older than Madison Bumgarner, and by just 1 year. But still, when you think of Madison Bumgarner, I automatically think, oh man, he's old. He just doesn't have it anymore. He's 31 years old. He's not old yet. Maybe for a pitcher, he is. But what's also strange is when he met the media after that start against the A's, where he was bad again. One line that he said that was weird to me was he feels like he's about to, in his words, cross that mountain or get over that hurdle where he's like he thinks he's really close to coming out on the other side of this bad stretch.
Figuring it out.
Yeah. And I don't really, I mean, maybe he's just saying that to just say it.
It must be a feel.
Maybe.
It can't be a performance based.
It can't be because, and I've noticed too, in each of his three starts this year, he has been just on the home plate umpires. He's been complaining and whining about the strike zone.
Well,
which is
in some cases, rightfully
they've been
so
bad.
Because, and this is my thought with that, that is all he can rely on at this
That's
point.
That's what I was going to say.
That's all he can rely
if he's
on
not
is
getting,
the edges and those corners.
If he's not getting those strike calls, he's got to throw his very hittable stuff in the strike zone. And guess what? The hittable stuff get hit a long way.
But the problem is that in some of those games, he has been right about how terrible the strike zone has been.
That Padres start was horrible. That guy's strike zone was terrible.
I think it leads to a lot of problems for him going downhill. And that's the part that I'm surprised about. You know, I get it, and I understand that he's kind of like trying to plead with the umpire, like, hey, I need those calls, or I'm not going to be able to do my job, you know? And you're right. He has nothing to overpower batters with. Nothing. That's the part where he can't rear back and start dialing into the strike zone and having guys just not be able to catch up with his timing, you know? It's difficult. That's the thing with Weaver was hitting close to 98, you know, with his fastball at times. So he was rearing back and throwing, and I know it doesn't seem like, 7 miles per hour makes that big of a difference, but it really does, especially when you can change speeds from 98 essentially down to 85, 84, and just completely have batters off on the timing. And with Weaver on that particular outing, he was also hitting all of those edges and getting those calls. That's the big difference. If you're not, you're not going to have a day like that. It's another call for Bears request for robot umps.
Please.
What we really need is just consistent strike zones so that these guys don't have to play this game where, you know,
it's like a negotiation. It's like the strike zone's the strike zone.
It's just wild.
Why?
It's just wild from one outing to the next what these pitchers have to deal
with,
really, when you look at it. Back on the point, though, Madison Bumgarner, you know, historically with the Giants, you go back to his career, 119 wins, 92 losses. 3.13 career ERA in 10 years. I have a hard time believing that he can't turn it around, but at the same time, too, there's a point in every athlete's career when his better days are behind him. Unfortunately, with Phoenix, we've seen too many of those guys here.
Yeah, we've had a lot of them.
It's a nice place to retire. It gets to the point where people want to live in a certain place to end their career. That's why so many athletes want to end up in L.A. or
Miami.
Look
what the Cardinals are doing right now.
The Cardinals are doing it.
I'm talking about the football Cardinals, by the way. J.J. Watt, A.J. Green.
The Cardinals are
James Conner is somewhat past his prime.
Yeah, sure, because
as a running back, at least.
Hey, look, if you can get down here and find a nice condo in Sun City early.
Yeah, I get it.
You could get that thing paid off, and, you know, your golden years are golden, you know?
You know what Madison Bumgarner should be?
Rodeo clown.
Hyunjin Ryu.
Oh, you meant as a baseball player.
Oh, yeah.
I just meant, like, you know what he should
like
be?
A garbage man?
Should he be able to
legally change his name to Mason Saunders?
Because, yeah, like you said, he's not going to blow He's not going to blow his fastball by guys, so he shouldn't try to be.
No.
He should be locating pitches. Ryu can probably hit low 90s just like he can, but he locates as well as anybody.
Yeah.
Ryu, in the last couple of years, is better than Madison Bumgarner. Much better than Madison Bumgarner. Yeah.
And maybe that's the corner that he's going to turn. Maybe that's the feel that he's getting. Maybe
that's
it's
what
just
he should
an
be
accuracy
trying to do.
Thing. Maybe, you know.
Well, and we heard towards the end of spring training that he was trying some new stuff with his delivery and all. Remember that? Not so much like the Johnny Cueto shimmy shake and
wasn't
all that
quick
stuff.
Quick pitching?
Yeah, and I haven't really seen that.
Well, he hasn't done it in games.
Yeah.
No, he hasn't.
He was trying it in like a sim game, like at the end of spring, but like I haven't seen it really in any of his regular season starts yet.
I remember when somebody from the media asked him that. They're like, we really didn't see too much of that. He's like, you haven't seen any of it because I haven't been doing it.
I'm not doing it.
Okay, well, I don't.
It must not have worked out.
Maybe, I don't know.
But let's turn.
Maybe he doesn't feel comfortable. That's
some other news this week. Even though Ahmed is back, Calhoun is back, Gallen's back. Christian Walker is now out. I believe it's an oblique strain. So I don't know how long he'll be sidelined with that. But Christian Walker, a mainstay in this lineup. First base goes to Asdrubal Cabrera, Pavin Smith, I assume. So, with the absence of Christian Walker, it almost feels to me like that's okay. At least we got the other three back.
Well, Cabrera,
you'd rather get three back than lose one.
Cabrera,
you know,
can play first well, and so this is an instance where it works out because he can fill in nicely and doesn't have to have anybody from the infield swapping and playing positions that aren't like their
natural
position.
Everyone else can play their normal spots.
It's funny you mention that, Derek, because we have the lineup for today.
Oh,
okay,
no.
What do we got?
Escobar is at second, Cabrera is at third.
Why is Escobar at second?
Wyatt Matheson is at first, and Steve's favorite thing is happening today.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Andrew Young is in left field.
Oh.
Because they're facing the Nationals today and Patrick Corbin. And apparently.
And Matheson at first?
And apparently, Torrey Lovello really doesn't think David Peralta can hit left-handed pitching. Because this is the third or fourth instance in this Young season.
In 2 weeks.
It's just because in that Reds, the home opener, David Peralta was pinch hit for in the sixth inning or whatever it was.
Yeah.
For Wyatt Matheson. And Matheson hit the ball hard, but he got out. But, man, it's just like, I don't think David Peralta should be getting the Jake Lamb treatment, per se.
Where he cannot be in the lineup
just
at all.
Cannot. Okay, if there's a lefty on the mound, he's not going to play. I just don't see
that. Yeah, but
that,
I'd like to point out, as I have been for the past 3 years, that Jake Lamb couldn't hit righties either. So,
that's true.
I mean, I'm just saying what the numbers say.
Especially when the alternative is having a guy like...
Wow, Steve. Wow.
I will take no punches. I will not pull back any of those punches.
Here's the thing. I wonder if...
When the alternative is Andrew Young playing left field, though,
that's just... Yeah, no, that's not
why?
Good. See, I don't like it.
I think there might be analytical data that we don't know. And I know that sounds weird. I know it sounds weird, right? But in some cases...
I'm going to need to see it.
At some point, you can't have infielders all playing your outfield,
Here's what I say, though. You never know where you show data-wise, factually, look... After a guy bats against the left-handed pitcher, he's then historically bad in his next two games until he gets right again for some reason, right? So that might be something with Peralta.
Maybe.
I don't know what's there.
Matheson, Smith, Marte, all infielders who played outfield for the Diamondbacks this year. Actually, I don't know if Matheson has played in regular season, but he didn't
sprint.
He's
played in left field.
Yeah.
So far in the regular season.
So that's four guys
who are
infielders.
He started that game against Blake Snell in San Diego.
Right,
started
that's right.
In left field. The second game of the season.
Marte is athletic enough that we can now consider him an outfielder.
Tim LaCastro.
But he came up as an
infielder. Tim LaCastro started as an infielder, too, and now he's their center fielder.
And David Peralta was a pitcher.
Hold on. Put some respect on his name. Tim LaCastro is a Hall of Famer, as far as I'm concerned.
28, I think it's 29 straight now stolen bases, but 28
to start your career.
Cleats,
cleats are in Cooperstown.
That's cool.
It's awesome, right?
I'm cool with it.
I think it's great.
I think a lot of people, I think a lot of people discredit,
give
like,
that man his flowers.
There's a lot of cool stuff in the Hall of Fame.
Sure.
You don't have to be a Hall of Fame player.
Right, right. There's,
you know what I mean?
A lot of stuff is, there's just cool, like a bat from this player that did this.
Or, like, people are like,
and uniforms.
Barry Bonds needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm like, he's in there.
He's in
there. Go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. There's plenty of information.
It's not like we're missing anything.
Right. And it's not like historically.
They didn't ignore that he hit 800 home runs or whatever.
Like, this ball was hit by somebody for his, you know.
They didn't put Reggie Stocker on all of his records or whatever.
Reggie Stocker.
I hope people get that reference.
That's a good one. But they,
no, yeah, it's cool to have your to have your cleats, and especially a player like LeCastro, who I don't think is well known around the league.
Again, it's just an example of the successful week they have, even if their record doesn't show it. There's a lot of positive things happening for this team. Luke Weaver's near perfect game, you know, LeCastro getting this record. These are all great things that, to be honest, can galvanize a team and make them start performing at a certain level. Like, we've seen these guys all play really well at times, even this season. It's just a matter of getting this lineup back healthy. This team has already experienced a season's worth of injuries,
right,
in the first like two weeks of the season. Yeah. It's crazy.
What's kind of troubling is we haven't really heard any updates on Ketel Marte.
No, not yet.
We haven't heard any.
And that hamstrings can be really, really tricky.
And it didn't look great. You know,
yeah,
it didn't look great.
Fell down and was face down in the dirt for a while.
I think that
they are get off the field.
Definitely going to take their time with it. I know that they announced that they have signed Josh Reddick to a minor league deal, and we could potentially see him with the club real soon. I mean,
I'd like to, instead of Andrew Young in left field.
I think that's
I'd like
thing.
To see Josh Reddick.
I don't really know.
That's a major league outfielder.
I don't know how well, you know, a guy that's, you know, a little bit older can be in his, you know, in this point of his career. But I just think based on what we've seen, we could definitely use the depth. You know, we have infielders playing outfield.
Four of them.
We have guys just literally filling in wherever they can. No natural positions being played.
I would like to see more, and it's weird because he's been playing in the outfield a lot. I would like to see Pavin Smith at first.
Yeah.
You know, but
well, but they've been playing Cabrera at first, and Cabrera's probably the best offensive player not named Eduardo Escobar so far.
Yeah. Pavin Smith isn't terrible in right field, though. Like, he's not awful. He's just new.
He's just not a right fielder.
It's not his natural position. So.
Yeah. I still think it's weird to be a left-handed.
The love affair with Wyatt Matheson right now. I don't know. He hits the ball hard every once in a while.
Listen,
I like
Wyatt Matheson. I brought him up last year, before he got called up to the majors. I remember we talked about him being the third cog in that offense for the Aces when it was Tomas and Crone and Matheson. I like Matheson, but I just don't know where he fits in this team.
Right.
Because he's a third baseman, and I don't trust him at second or first, really. But we'll see. With LeCastro, I would say, why isn't LeCastro playing more? Like, he is the fastest player in Major League Baseball. That should be a guy you play enough
when
just to get to like
even,
30 steals.
Even when everyone's healthy, you got to find a way to get him in the game.
Well, and if Cattell's out, Calhoun was out for a week. Apparently, David Peralta doesn't play against lefties. Well, how is LeCastro not playing?
LeCastro has been playing every day in center field since Ketel Marte has been out.
Yeah, but before that, even.
Yeah.
When Calhoun was out.
He was playing right a couple times. They were platooning Pavin Smith and LeCastro.
Maybe it's just me. But I just feel like LeCastro probably deserves a bigger role. He gets on base.
And with this team,
historically,
with this team not having like the big power bat or whatever, a guy like Tim LeCastro is so valuable because he can steal bases and manufacture runs that way.
Yeah.
I mean, there's zero reason why, even with his late start due to COVID, he still hit over 300 in spring. Like you said, he gets on base. That's one thing that's amazing about him. He has, 348 on base percentage so far this year. But I just think that there's something about him that's built different. You know, I think we kind of used to laugh even in the media at him a little bit with how much he got hit by pitches.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed talking to him about it because he was such a personality. He was so open and willing to talk. But one thing I noticed when, and I know I've told this story before, but it was just how serious he was. Like, he wasn't joking. He wasn't, you know, he was like, if I see an opportunity to get on base, I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
He's like, that's the most important thing is getting runners on, trying to get them to score and win the game. And, like, he almost has this, like, 1950s ball player attitude about him, like from Brooklyn or something, where he's like, what are you talking about? Hitting my pitches on the – you get a runner on, you get on, you get on. Who cares? You know, like, he has this fire to him and this – like, you sit back and you might, like, laugh at it. You might think, like, man, you got to watch out because you could get hurt or whatever. But – you got to admire his dedication to winning and trying to do whatever, literally whatever it takes. That's just different. Not a lot of baseball players are like that. You know, there are too many guys that are going to be worried about getting hurt or laying themselves out on the line for a single play or anything like that. Maybe sometimes it's silly. It's definitely silly to do it during spring training. That's for sure. But he's just that kind of special ball player. They need somebody that can get on base, that can, you know, get a run started with this team offensively. Like I said earlier, they've just been so streaky that they need, you know, that guy that can do it. I would love to see him playing every day. This team has plenty of holes, and he has the ability to basically play anywhere.
He's also really useful as a bench player because you can put him on the base paths. Once a game, you can just put him on the base paths and see what happens.
I think, again, that might be the reason why you don't see him start as much.
Yeah.
But still play in
Could
a lot
play
of
a
games
role.
Because he just has that versatility for late inning, you know, usage for anywhere. You know, you can pinch hit, you know, for the pitcher with him and then leave him in the game and swap someone else out or do whatever you need to do in order to keep him in.
That's a good point. What would you like to see this week? What do we need to see this week from the Diamondbacks?
Well, this week's going to be difficult because they're playing some pretty good teams. I'll pull up the schedule real quick.
Well, they have the Nationals.
They play the four-game series against the Nationals. They are facing, by the way, in there's another pitcher in there to break it up, but Patrick Corbin, Max Scherzer, and Steven Strasburg.
I've heard of them.
All right.
Those are big names.
I've heard of them.
And then they play the Reds again next week for three games, and then they're at the Braves. The Braves are... Man, they got some good players. I'd like to see some competitive games there.
Wins, Steve. I'd like to see some wins.
I mean, I don't know if it's going to happen because they are facing some tough lineups, but man, Madison Bumgarner, you got to do something.
That's the big one for
you.
Yeah.
You got, I mean, $79 million left on his deal after this. You got to show something to me.
I'll stick with starting pitching and say I'd love to see what Luke Weaver does to follow up that last start.
That's a good one, too.
I would just like to see this truly might be the start of something special. And, I mean, really, if you talk about Weaver getting on a roll and Gallen being back, that's going to help this lineup so much. Madison Bumgarner is just such an important piece of that, though. You know, you just – what are you going to do with him? If he can't be a quality starting pitcher,
do you put him in the bullpen?
Do you send him to the alternate site? Do you do anything like that? Like you
make up a fake injury and put him on the injured list?
That's one of
I wouldn't be shocked if we see a Madison Bumgarner injury soon, whether it's real or not.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of hinting that it might not be.
Just do it.
I'll just be the contrarian and throw something out we haven't talked about yet today. I'll say that I'm keeping my eye on Carson Kelly, who has had a pretty good start to the season.
Hitting second today.
And quite frankly, we talked about it before the season started. This is a make-or-break year for Carson Kelly as well as Luke Weaver.
Weaver credited him a lot with his game, too. Just the great game he called behind the plate.
And we know how good of friends they are, having come from St. Louis together. Yep. And Steven Vogt has been playing pretty well when he plays. So there might be that little extra bit of pressure nudging Carson Kelly forward this year, which I think could be nothing but good. I think having the competitive... juices flowing can do nothing but good for the two of them. So I'm keeping an eye on that as well. Last thing I'll bring up before we finish up. Today in Arizona, Governor Ducey signed a new bill that basically makes sports gambling legal in Arizona.
All right. What do you want to bet? I got $20 right now.
Something that's already happening. So right after the governor did that, the Phoenix Suns announced a partnership with, I think it's FanDuel. They're expecting to open a sports book in the arena.
So are the Arizona Diamondbacks.
So are the Diamondbacks.
Yes.
So my question to you guys is, in a year or two, when we're down the road and these things are implemented and we could see a sports book, I'm just throwing this out there, TGI Fridays is now gone. Could we see a sports book in left field?
Oh, absolutely.
It is?
Yeah, TGI Fridays is gone.
Oh, wow.
The last TGI Fridays
totally empty.
In Arizona.
Oh, sad
so,
day.
But I was thinking,
those
potato skins.
These sports books, they're going to want to put them in a place where you can get in from the outside or the inside.
Yep.
So that people can go to the sports book and not the game, or vice versa.
That would be cool. And if it brings,
left field would be the perfect place for it.
You booked the territory, Steve. You got it.
I'm not reporting. Just reporting.
Brings in also more revenue to the Diamondbacks, where they can spend a little bit more money on their players, I am all for it.
So
I don't know how.
So here's
work,
the question then: what does sports betting during games look like in 2 years? Will you be able to just, like, during an at-bat, will you be able to predict the next pitch is going to be a ball?
Well, there is, there's going to be...
This guy's
going
to hit a home
batting.
Run.
There's going to be fantasy sports. There's going to be apps that you can bet directly. The Diamondbacks have said that you'll be able to gamble directly from an app.
Right.
As well as go to the sport book. I don't know. I think...
there could be games in the concourse.
Yeah, sure.
What if they're in-game, between inning games end up being something like that, too?
Well, there's going to be prop bets. There's going to be all
the hot
sorts
dog
of
race.
Ridiculous
yeah.
stuff. Prop bets.
The Legends race,
yes.
too?
Those I are want, fixed, though.
I want to bet on...
But so is every...
No, no,
so
no.
Are horse races.
I got it. I want to so bet on the matching game. The game where they have to flip over the numbers and match stuff.
Dude, I feel like that's... That's one of the most one of the points in the game where the fans get the most like rowdy when the person who's playing the match game
sucks at it,
and it's like, dude, it's 1-12.
I want to bet on the kid catching fly balls in right field.
You want to be the kid catching fly balls?
Well, yeah, that's
right
a whole other thing. But, yeah.
I would bet against you. No offense.
I think I would bet against me.
They
too.
They used to do the sink or float game in the pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna bet on all this stuff.
That race where they try to move a Oreo down their face up in the upper concourse. I think this is the end of time, Steve. I think this is the beginning of a dystopian world.
I believe it's in the Bible.
Broke
yeah.
people, mega corporations ruling over us like lords. The best way to double your money, as my dad used to say, is to keep it in your pocket when you're gambling. So yeah, I will say
thanks, Dad.
I'm going to stick that. He also used to say lazy people work twice as hard, so my dad was good with a lot of those kind of things.
Your dad might have been better at this than mine. Mine used to always just say, leave the gun, grab the cannoli.
Wow.
Which never really seemed applicable to my life.
I don't understand what that means.
It's a line from The Godfather.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But I've never found it useful in my life.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dad. Yeah.
But as a metaphor, I don't know what it means.
I don't either. I really don't. I've never come across a cannoli in my life.
Oh, my God.
You've never had a cannoli?
No, I've never actually had a cannoli.
Oh, my God. We're taking Steve for
even
a
after my childhood
after
of my father telling me to
no, get in the car. Let's go. We're going to go get one.
All right.
Leave the
down to DeFalco's.
If they had one at the ballpark, I'd get one.
Yeah. I'm sure they do.
They probably do somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I think it would be really awesome if they turned that TGI Friday space into a sports book.
Sure. That would be
that'd
awesome.
Be really cool.
That would be pretty cool.
That'd be really, really
I didn't even know it was gone.
I will say it's like a lot
it's
of
cause
things.
It's because they don't show it on TV. It's depressing.
They often make a big deal about this stuff. And then you see other states adopt rules about fantasy betting and sports betting. And oh my God, they didn't burn to the ground because of this, right? I think that we're getting to a point where we're accepting some of these things in society. And, you know, sports betting is one of them. I thought it's silly because at times I've wanted to participate just in contests.
Yeah.
And at time, the contest I wanted to participate weren't allowed in the state of Arizona.
Right.
Like when I filled in my information, they were like, sorry, you're in Arizona.
You live there.
Yeah, you can't,
the daily fantasy sports leagues, I don't think you can do that here in Arizona currently. Yeah. I mean, I don't know now about this new bill that was signed today, but you can't play physical craps in Arizona. Like, they don't have craps at the casinos. You could have a digital, like, game of craps,
which
but you
I
can't have a craps
so
table.
So much. You talk
makes
about
no sense.
Predetermined.
Yeah.
Those things are faker than wrestling.
Yeah. I'm with you. All right. Well, we're going to wrap up the podcast. We thank you so much for checking us out. We do think that we're the best Diamondbacks podcast that's out there, so you be the judge.
Speak for yourself, Steve.
I just did. I'm Steve Zinsmeister. That's Derek Montilla. Cody Fincher as well. We thank you so much for listening here at ArizonaSports.com and on the Arizona Sports app.
Go get a cannoli, Steve.